In 1992, a 20-year-old aspiring model disappeared after going on a photo shoot. It seemed as if she had just vanished into thin air. Her family hoped to find her for years, but their hope was shattered when hikers came across a shallow grave with human remains 11 years later. This is the story of Kimberly Pendelius. Hi everyone, I'm your host Miko, and welcome to bonus episode 2 of True Crime Timeline. I picked this case since it happened so close to home. I've been in the Angeles National Forest millions of times, and it's really scary to think that this happened in my own backyard. Now, before we begin, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for joining True Crime Timeline's Patreon program. Your support really helps keep this podcast going, and it also enables me to provide bonus content. I truly appreciate you going on this true crime journey together with me. So with that, let's start this episode. The Angeles National Forest is a popular spot for Angelenos and tourists alike. Some are drawn there for the endless hiking and mountain biking trails. Others delight in camping with family and friends. And others drive up in the evening with their dates to park at a lookout, snuggle, and look down at the LA city lights for that perfect date. But people also go up there for other reasons. And these reasons have nothing to do with becoming one with nature. No, these reasons are far more malignant and evil. On March 3, 1993, some hikers decided to explore the Angeles Forest Trails. They drove up Angeles Crest Highway and headed to the Monte Cristo Campground. But on that day, this hike would be different from their past hikes, because in a secluded wooded area near the campground, they stumbled upon what looked like a shallow grave. To their horror, the grave contained what looked like a skull and pelvic bone, so they immediately contacted the authorities. Investigators scoured the crime scene, and near the skull, they also found a fractured mandible, handcuffs, jewelry, hair, fabric, and a bra and pantyhose. They noticed that both bra straps had been cut by some type of sharp object, like a scissors or a knife, probably enabling the killer to remove the bra while the victim's arms were handcuffed. The pantyhose also appeared to have been cut by most likely the same sharp object. The LA County Coroner's Office worked hard to identify the remains, and by March 12th, using dental records, the victim was identified as Kimberly Pendelius, a woman who had been missing since 1992. Investigators went back and reviewed Kimberly's missing person file. 20-year-old Kimberly, her husband, and her 13-year-old son moved from Florida to Northridge, a city in the San Fernando Valley. She had big hopes of becoming a professional model someday, but she knew that she had to earn her dues. So she worked hard to gain experience and also earn a little money by taking small modeling gigs. One day, in a local weekly paper, she spotted a modeling ad by someone who represented themselves as a magazine photographer named Paul. She contacted Paul by leaving her number on his beeper. He called her back and they set up a meeting. During that first meeting, he showed her a portfolio of his elite clients. Paul went on to tell Kim that he would be able to get her on the cover of a magazine, but she shouldn't tell anybody until the magazine was released. Kim was so excited, since this gig could possibly be her big break into professional modeling. Although she had promised not to tell anyone, She called her mom, who she spoke to every day, and told her about the magazine cover. Kim was very close to her mother, so she couldn't keep a secret like this from her. Kim agreed to meet Paul for the photo shoot in the Angeles National Forest on Thursday, February 27, 1992. On that day, Kim excitedly told her babysitter about her upcoming photo shoot. Kim put on a blue suit, white blouse, and high heels, said goodbye to her son Nicholas, and headed out. Her first stop was to get her hair done. After that, she started her hour drive to the Angeles National Forest, and it was now around 1 p.m. Around 2:30 p.m., according to the babysitter, Paul called confirming his appointment with Kim. And then he called again around 7 p.m. to let Kim know that she had left her planner. But Kim wasn't there for either of those two calls. Her husband, Peter, was growing more and more concerned as day turned into night and he still hadn't heard anything from her. Later that night, an LA deputy sheriff noticed a Chrysler Laser parked on Angeles Crest Highway near the Monte Cristo campground. There was nobody in the car, and the car appeared to be in good condition. The sheriff had no idea that this was Kim's car, since her husband Peter had not yet reported her missing, thinking he had to wait a full 48 hours before making a report. Then, as it got later that night, a second deputy driving on Angeles Crest Highway noticed a fire that appeared to be coming from a parked car. He could see that the fire appeared to have started in the front passenger side of the car rather than the engine, which meant that whoever started this fire was either trying to commit suicide or was trying to destroy evidence. Again, at this point, the police were unaware of the link between the car and Kim. On Friday, the police brought dogs in, but they didn't go far enough into the forest for the dogs to find Kim. Also on Friday, her mom was now starting to get worried because she hadn't heard from Kim. Her mother finally got a hold of Peter, who said that Kim had not returned home from the photo shoot and that he was really worried. Her mom knew that something was really wrong. She felt it. She started calling LA hospitals to see if Kim had been in an accident, but there was no record of Kim being admitted. Peter tried driving around all day that Friday and again came up empty. Finally, on Saturday, Peter reported Kim missing. On March 2nd, investigators traced the car registration on the burned car back to Kim Pandelios. But there were no people recovered in the car, so where was Kim? They did find a spiral notebook inside the car, but it didn't provide any clues since it was so badly burned. Relatively close to Kim's car, other items were found, including a plastic lighter, an empty charcoal lighter fluid container, and a handcuff key. Around 3 weeks later, hikers found Kim's appointment book around 2 miles away from where the car was found. It was found next to a creek underneath the bridge. But again, no Kim. Kim's family was heartbroken. They held on to hope through the years that Kim was still alive. Until March 2, 1993, when hikers found her skeletal remains. Her mom remembered standing in her kitchen when she got the call that would change her life forever. The police told her, using dental records, that they were 99% sure that they had found her daughter. Her mother wanted to hold on to that 1% chance that they were wrong, but the other evidence pointed towards it being Kim. Her mother was devastated. Now the family wanted justice. In 2004, the cold case unit noticed the similarities between Kim's case and the disappearance of Linda Sobeck, who had been a model and former LA Raiders cheerleader. Linda had been raped and murdered after meeting up with a photographer named Charles Rathman on November 16, 1995. Rathbun turned himself in on November 24th and took police to her body that was buried in a shallow grave in the Angeles National Forest. He had told police that he had accidentally killed her while having consensual sex. However, the autopsy showed that she had also been anally raped with a handgun prior to being strangled. The jury just didn't buy the "it was an accident" defense, and he was convicted of first-degree murder and sexual assault and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Investigators thought that Rathbun could have possibly killed Kim as well, but there was just no evidence tying him to her death. So they continued their search for Paul, the photographer who was last with Kim. Also in 2004, investigators came across a statement from an underage girl who was referred to as MK. MK stated that her boyfriend, David Rademacher, had admitted to her that he had killed Kim on multiple occasions. The first time was when he took her up into Angeles Forest, pulled over, and confessed to sodomizing and murdering a blonde model that he had met through a personal ad. At that time, MK didn't believe him, so she never reported it. The second time Rademacher brought up Kim to MK was when they were watching an episode of Unsolved Mysteries on TV, which did a segment on Kim. Rademacher had told her that the story was wrong because it had incorrectly alleged that the killers were bikers. The third time Rademacher brought up Kim was when she told him that she wanted to date someone closer to her age. At that point, Rademacher started to threaten her and told her that she might suffer the same fate as the model that he had raped and killed in the forest. Police had what they needed to start building a case against Rademacher, who had recently been paroled, serving 6 of the 12-year sentence for statutory rape of MK. Investigators soon tracked down another girl who had been Rademacher's girlfriend around the time of Kim's murder. She was referred to as CH in the court records, and she was 14 at the time when she was dating Rademacher. CH told investigators that back in February 1992, Rademacher had taken her to the Angeles National Forest so that he could set a car on fire that he had previously seen parked on Angeles Crest Highway. She also remembered the next day watching the news and seeing a report on the car that Rademacher had burned the night before. CH called the police and told them. However, for reasons unknown, the police did not respond to this tip and filed the information away. Now, police asked CH if she would be willing to help them try to get Rademacher to admit that he had done this on tape, and she agreed. With her help, police were able to get multiple phone conversations recorded and had taped one face-to-face meeting. In these conversations, Rademacher admitted to setting the car on fire, but he refused to admit that he had killed her. In one of their last phone conversations, Rademacher asked CH to meet him again so that they could talk about what happened in the forest. He told her that he would explain everything. However, by this point, police felt that it wouldn't be safe for her to meet with him. Instead, they thought they had what they needed and arrested him. The trial was scheduled in January 2005 and lasted for 2 months. Her mother had to endure listening to the horrendous details of what had happened to her precious daughter while Rademacher sat there defiantly, continuing to deny his guilt. The prosecution argued that Rademacher had lured Kim to Angeles National Forest for a fake photo shoot. Once she parked along the shoulder of Angeles Crest Highway, Paul drove up in his car and parked really close to her. Kim got out of her car, and that's when Rademacher grabbed and handcuffed her. He threw her into his van. He didn't realize that in the scuffle that he had dropped the keys to the handcuffs near her car. Once he had her alone and isolated in the woods, he then beat her up, raped, and sodomized her. MK testified it that Rademacher told her, quote, she was pleading with him to let her go, that she wouldn't press charges, that she would just pretend it hadn't happened because she wanted to go home to her kid, unquote. But Rademacher had no compassion. Instead, he pushed her head into a nearby creek and drowned her. When he was done, he coldly left, but then returned with CH later to burn Kim's car. Rademacher maintained his innocence throughout the trial. The prosecution used phone records to prove that Rademacher had orchestrated the killing. Remember, according to the babysitter, Rademacher had called Kim's home twice that day, once to confirm his appointment with her, and another time to say that he had left her appointment book. Those phone calls would later be tied back to him. The prosecution also relied on the statements from MK and CH. The taped conversations that were set up with CH was a huge roadblock for the defense, since he had admitted to burning Kim's car. Those tapes, combined with MK's testimony on how Rademacher had confessed to killing Kim multiple times, painted the picture of Rademacher as a cold, calculating murderer. The prosecution's case was persuasive because, after deliberating for 4 days, the 8 men and 4 women jury convicted Rademacher of first-degree murder with a special circumstance of kidnapping. During the penalty phase, Kim's mom explained how Rademacher had ripped apart the lives of everyone that was close to Kim. And after 2.5 days of deliberation, the jury sentenced Rademacher to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Although this could never bring back Kim, justice had been achieved, and Rademacher was off the streets, unable to kill or hurt anybody else in the future. Kim's soul is at peace. She will always be remembered by her family and friends for her beautiful spirit and kind heart. Her mom visited the Monte Cristo campground and the creek where Kim had died. According to the Los Angeles Daily News, quote, she bent down and laid 6 white roses and a framed photo of Kim on a rock above the water. Then she began to read her daughter's favorite poem, Los Zapaticos de Rosa, by the Cuban intellectual José Martí, which she remembers Kim reciting when she was young. It sounded like her mother was crying out for Kim to return as she sobbed through the 64-line poem. Listen to that water running. It is her life. I know how she was born, and now I know how she died. And I know her soul is around. She went back to nature, unquote. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. Check out the True Crime Timeline Patreon page for pictures about this episode. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge the many sources that I used. This episode would not have been possible without these sources, so please check them out. If you want a list of the sources, please email me at truecrimetimelinepod@gmail.com. So with that, take care and stay safe, everyone.